News Talks Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
Thanks to Air, with UEFA Champions and Europa Leagues action. Brought to you by Air Sport.
Yeah, you're welcome back. So, should remind you, we have the game live from the Aviva tomorrow night. We also had the game on Friday night live with Dave and Stewie Byrne calling the action.
Davies goes long towards the edge of the area, towards Vokes, beats Sam Vokes, rushing onto it at speed now as Gunter gets the ball across O'Shea, late challenge on O'Shea by Bale, that's surely a yellow card, and it is. Gareth Bale goes into the book now, and John O'Shea felt that. It was really good defending from John O'Shea, got across Bale, volleyed it clear, and then was smashed by the Real Madrid winger.
Yeah, you can see what Bale was trying to do, just a last ditch tackle trying to get on the end of it, but he's got a studs up. You know, and he's caught O'Shea. Interesting enough, Bale misses the next match now. That's a key game for them.
That's a big loss now. As Bale went in very... That's a bad challenge from Gareth Bale. And another look at that. The referee, if he'd seen a replay, that may well not have been a yellow. It could have been red.
It's a bad tackle, all right. He could have broke his leg there.
John O'Shea, I'm delighted to say, has made some time for us. John, you've gone back to Sunderland. You're out of the game tomorrow night.
Yeah, back on club duties today. Just resting the leg up. Obviously, thankfully, it wasn't anywhere near as serious as obviously Seamus, you know. So thankfully, I got away with one.
Stitches was what we heard.
Yeah.
Are we talking Manny?
About 5 or 6.
Right.
Deep inside, and then 4 or 5 on the outside, you know. So
right,
it was a shocker, John. I thought as well immediately when I'd first seen it. What was your instant reaction to?
Yeah,
to that?
Instant reaction, Kev. I knew he'd caught me, but I didn't think it was. Obviously, I've seen it back on the television, etc. So, but initially, I didn't think it was too bad. You know, I just thought obviously I knew he was late. Don't get me wrong, but obviously, when you see it back, it looks. Not that it looks probably worse than it was, but it was a bad tackle, and the referee deemed it a yellow. Another time, it could have been a different colour. But look, if I was the lucky one, you know. A minute later, we all know what happened, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting you say it's maybe only when you saw it back on the TV replay that you fully appreciated the full circumstances of the Bale tackle on you, because a lot of people read into the fact that he tried to apologise. You probably don't even remember this stuff because it happens on the pitch all the time, but he sort of seemed to be half apologising to you as you were walking back up towards the halfway line, and you weren't really kind of giving him a nod or a high five or engaging with him, and people thought that you knew then just how bad it was.
Yeah, no, well, I didn't particularly know how bad it was, but I knew, thankfully, I was okay. Obviously, I couldn't tell, because of the socks and the kind of shin pad, I couldn't really tell that there had been any a cut to the leg, if you know what I mean. So,
yeah.
But look, I was at the clear on the ball. I was getting on with things, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And he was, after coming up and saying, to be honest, I'd be guessing if I was trying to remember what he did say to me, but it was along the lines of, look, I didn't mean that type of thing, you know. Or,
yeah.
Well, I was a bit late. As I said, I couldn't really tell you what exactly he said.
Yeah. Did you sense he was coming? Because it sort of looked like you know, you could have really wellied that ball, but you almost kind of scooped it and kind of got the leg out of there. Did you feel, your kind of peripheral vision, like someone was coming in?
Yeah, a little bit. But I knew I was getting there first, if you know what I mean. Because
yeah.
I'd read the situation, if you know what I mean, that the ball was going to... Come in that way, but I think it helped that I was kind of clearing the ball, so my leg was lifting, if you know what I mean. My leg was kind of going up the way, so my shin pad took a good bang as well.
John, when Chris Coleman was questioned after the game, his instant reaction was to say, look, your boys didn't come off with any halos on the head after this game. Did it feel like that sort of physical game when you were playing it, real needle in the match?
Not at all, Kev. Not at all. I think because obviously the players knew each other so well. I didn't think, for me anyway, that's just a personal answer. I didn't think there was a needle as such. But because of the nature of everyone knowing each other so well, I think there was always going to be a kind of a natural competitiveness to it, like the most international games have. But that, a little extra bit, I suppose, because. It was the teams knew each other so well, and obviously the game matters so much, you know.
Yeah. As you say, I mean, so thankfully your leg's not planted on the ground and the game goes on and we know what happened to Seamus. Did you go near the scene, John? Did you run up and have a look or did you stay away from it or what was your perspective on it all?
I was obviously a good bit away initially and then obviously as it kind of developed, you know, it's very serious. And then I went up to him just as the doc and the physio and everyone, the stretcher had come on just to kind of give him a tap on the shoulder as if to say, look, you can't really say anything to him because you know you can see in his face the shock and the pain he's in, you know, so you just kind of give him a tap. And obviously I've seen after as long he was obviously comforting him as much as he could because, look, obviously I've never experienced that like that, but obviously the shock and the pain kicks in, I presume, so... but look, thankfully the surgery's gone well from what we've heard. And as Kev would tell you, the type of fella Seamus is, you know, the captain, but the type of character and the way he trains and looks after himself, he, if anyone has a chance of coming back fitter, stronger, a better player than what he was, he will be in the top three of any of those players who could come back like that, you know.
It was a credit to the medical side how quickly they reacted as well, John. That's what I thought initially after the match.
Yeah, without a doubt. Look, any time I've had whether it be stitches or treatment or head injuries or anything like that, they've always been Doc Allen Byrne and Kieran Murray and John O'Byrne as well. John O'Byrne comes in for the match days. Top class, because they're great people as well, and they really look after the lads like they're one of their own children. You know, it's that type of feeling about the place. You know,
for the vast majority of us watching at home, the rest of the game loses some of its impact. Like you've got social media, so you're seeing the latest in Seamus, or you're seeing pictures that you probably don't want to see. I know Keith Andrews was at the game and he was on our station over the weekend and he was saying once he saw the Coleman injury that, you know, he just wanted to leave the stadium. He was kind of done with the game. It's kind of shuddering, sobering moment for everyone. You on the pitch have to go and play a game. Is it easy to kind of forget about it? Is it kind of on your mind, or what's that moment like where you have to go, right, we have to go back to playing football now?
Yeah, I think the next 5 minutes is a bit of a it's on your mind without a doubt. But then kind of the game naturally kind of takes over, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably when you see, obviously, Cyrus comes on to replace Seamus, and then suddenly you're thinking, okay, we're getting more of the ball here, we're starting to create more chances. Aiden comes on, and you're just kind of thinking, okay, it'd be great if we could get this goal to win, it's obviously such an important game, but to have the bonus of if we got 3 points, and not that it's going to make up for what's happened to Seamus, but sure, it'd be just like be fitting for him if we were able to get a win. But now we have to, I think for him, for Seamus to get to that World Cup for him, you know, it'd be for everyone in the country, but for him now after what's happened, it'll be a big thing, you know.
Is it a subdued mood in the dressing room after something like that? Is it like, it's all anyone's talking about, I guess?
Yeah, without a doubt, because obviously some lads, as you said, or shall we say the younger generation are onto their phones and pictures and images of us, and some lads want to see it, but they're looking at it, and other lads don't want to know and type of thing. But
did you have a look?
Not particularly. No, I didn't want to see it initially. It's just one of them things, and then you're checking. We were wanting to find out how he was, where he was after going. Was his family okay? Were they after getting out to see him, etc.?
Yeah.
All that was looked after great, you know.
Yeah. Have you spoken to him, John, since?
I've sent him a few messages and I tried to call him there a couple of times, but yeah. I was going to actually go the Friday evening after the game, but there was the manager, Roy, there was plenty of lads going, and obviously his family were there too, so I didn't want to add to too many people going out to him.
Yeah.
But no, I'll be in touch with him as soon as I can. But I'm imagining, obviously, he's with his family, and his little girl and his wife, and they'll be looking after him the next few days, and then he'll be on the road to recovery.
Yeah. Up until that point, they had a lot of possession. That said, you know, Kev's analysed the game for us, and he kind of thought that it was probably as comfortable as you might have hoped the game would be from your point of view. Like, they had a lot of possession that wasn't necessarily hurting us. What was your sense up until that 68th minute?
Yeah, without a doubt. I think Bale was probably after letting off maybe one shot maybe from outside the box before. He let one off then after they were down to 10 men. But apart from that, obviously Darren was having, and ourselves in the back were kind of having a quiet night as such, as in the lads in front were doing a great job as well, screening, protecting. And we knew we had to kind of keep that compactness because Bale, Ramsey, Joe Allen, they're looking for those little pockets to create. And even when Bale drops deeper, they were looking for the balls in behind our fullbacks. Their wing-backs were just kind of making darting runs. They'd had a little bit of joy in the first half with a couple of balls they'd played in, and we could have been under a bit more pressure if they had controlled it better a couple of times. But no, overall, there was very little between the teams, and I think both keepers were fairly quiet on the night.
Now, Chris Coleman said after the game as well, John, he said when it was 11v11, he felt that they controlled the game. He felt that they were the side that looked like that they were going to go on and create and score goals. How did you feel from your own point of view when he's saying that, or how did you feel yourself during the game? Then you mentioned that I think one of the plus points from the night was actually your performance and how you looked alongside Richard Keogh, because there's so much said about our injuries coming into the game. So did you feel as though that you were troubled in the spells when it was 11v11, as Chris Coleman was saying?
No, because it was all in front of us, Kev, if you know what I mean. They were having a bit of possession around the midfield area and their back three as such. But then obviously we can see everything in front of us, so we're able to control and move players along to wherever we need. So in that sense, they might have had a bit more possession, but it was a case that we knew with our positioning, with the way we were structured, we weren't going to give them much space. So we knew then hopefully we were going to be able to counter-attack a bit better than what we did to create more problems for them. But I think obviously when we get the extra man, then that's where we have to be a bit careful, in the sense that we were not going gung-ho, but obviously we're attacking a lot more, and you have to be careful, even though they do have 10 men, to be careful of that counter-attack, you know. And the one time we were a little bit sloppy, Bale almost stuck it in the top corner, you know, from about 30 yards. So it would have been a signal for sure.
One example I always think of when, you know, this team is really at its best is, you know, from tip-off against the French last year in Euro 2016, where the ball goes back to Coleman, seeing as we're talking about Coleman, and he cuts inside. He was under pressure from someone, cuts inside that French player, gives it to McCarthy in midfield, who gets it out to Ward on the left, and we work it up the left, and the ball goes in, and it's a penalty. And you think, God, it's really brilliant football, and these guys are really showing what they can do. It seemed on Friday, I mean, I'd love to get your sense on it, John. You know, we were clipping a lot of balls long. I don't know, did it feel like there wasn't enough space to play, or did you decide beforehand, look, they have to beat us, let's just clip them long and not take too many chances? Or what was your feel for that in the early stages of the game?
No, look, it's one of them things. Initially, into the game, you're wanting to push Wales back.
Yeah.
To get up the pitch a bit so we can get more possession in their half and kind of play from there. You're thinking then with the three at the back, there's spaces in behind our wing backs. So you're hoping for Longy and Johnny Walters to exploit that for us, you know, as well.
Yeah.
And to get that bit more joy. But obviously Wales are cute enough to be aware of that. They see our lineup. They know then maybe when we have time on the ball, whether it be our full backs or one of the deeper midfield lads, that they can give themselves the space to nullify some of our threats, you know. So that's when we should have been getting on the ball more so, without a doubt, because, as you said, we have been doing it in games, and you look at, you'd be wanting Jeff to get on the ball, create stuff for us, and to be more, like he will be going forward, more dominant in games because of the ability he has, you know. Mm. And it was a tricky one. You're talking about the players we were missing, etc., and then we lose James in the warm-up too.
Yeah.
David has to, Milo has to come in and and step in at the last second. So those things kind of, not upset, but they just take a while for everyone to get into the swing of things and to get that fluidity back into the team that you need to create those openings that we didn't really do enough of.
Mm. Are you fit for club action at the weekend, or what's the story?
I hope so. I won't be doing any training till maybe Wednesday, Thursday, I think. And we see how it is again tomorrow. Hopefully, maybe you'll be able to do a bit of jogging or running tomorrow, a bit of light ball work, and we see how it reacts to that then.
Right, okay.
John, I wanted to ask you, just in relation to yourself, did you contemplate retirement after the Euros in the summer? Did you think about it at all?
Yeah, I did, Kev, yeah. I did.
Well, it's more in relation to these sort of games. You started the group. All of a sudden now you're playing in such a big game now in Dublin against Wales. Does it make it all the sweeter that you have decided now to stay on and playing in these games, particularly with the way that the group's going at the moment for us?
Yeah, without a doubt, Kev. Without a doubt it does. But it was one of them things, obviously, I've been obviously picked all for however many years, 14, 15 years, and then obviously you're not, say, a first-choice player, in inverted commas, shall we say. But you know then, it's a special group that we'd kicked on, and obviously, thankfully, we started the group so well in the sense of, so you're thinking all things are going well. But it was a decision that when I spoke to the manager, he had just said, look, you'll be important, etc., etc. So when you just hear these things, and obviously for being from Waterford, etc., playing for Ireland, I love it. So all those factors just kind of swayed me to carry on.
Are you trying to say O'Shea should have retired, Kilbane?
No, I wasn't meaning that. No, I remember. I just think about it.
I was saying it myself.
I remember after we played France in 2009, John, and it was Liam Brady after the game said to me. Liam Brady came to me and said, "Look, make sure you don't retire. Look, you're going to be a part of the plans going forward." But it certainly was in my head after that game, and I just wondered what your thought process was. That was all it was. And you know, you talk about your time away from your families, you talk about maybe even prolonging your club career as well. So it's just about the things that you have to take into effect when you're making that decision. That was the only thing that I was maybe thinking about in relation to you.
Without a doubt. And obviously my wife was delighted I decided to carry on. She was enjoying the breaks from me. So no, look, it was one of them things that I just felt I still could give something and could still help out. And obviously just in the far, far deep reaches in the back of my mind there, the annoying bit of never being to a World Cup. So
yeah,
that little factor was playing there too.
Well, hopefully we get there. The group is looking pretty healthy. We have taken this at the start of the campaign. I'm sure you would have as well. One last question then. You know, you look at the table and Sunderland they're bottom on 20. You've got Middlesbrough 22. You've got Hull on 24. And then it's a bit of a gap to Swansea on 27. You and the team have been in this position before. It must get pretty tough year on year being in this dogfight. How would you characterise the mood?
Yeah, the mood is surprisingly, I won't say okay. It's obviously tense, but also the manager is experienced enough. Kev knows that he has to have that level of the balance of the enjoyable training, but also the seriousness of obviously the situation we're in, and we have to take that and ultimately turn it into wins. To turn training performances, attitude and training, replicate that on match day, and obviously the games they're counting down now, 10 to go. So yeah. Swansea are the team we have to catch, in the sense they're in that position where we want to be at the end of the season, you know.
Yeah, well, hopefully it goes well for you on that front as well. Thanks a million for talking to us, much appreciated.
Thanks, John.
No worries, Joe. Cheers, Kev. Take care.
Off the Ball on News Talk 106 to 108.
I'm prepared to do anything I can.
Well,
to
do it then.
Again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Really good show. Lined up tonight in the football show. Simon Cooper is always an excellent guest. Will talk to us about just what is going on with Dutch football. Danny Blin sacked after 20 months in charge. It looks like the Dutch will miss out on a second successive major tournament. And frankly, it's a mess. So we'll talk to Simon Cooper. Also seems Patrick Kluivert, PSG director of football now, has got himself caught up with a criminal gang who've been blackmailing him over gambling debts. So Simon might talk to us about that as well. Kev watched the England game yesterday. He'll give us a sense of that. Jermaine Defoe scoring. Age 34 for England. And Northern Ireland had a really good win, 2-0 over Norway as well. You were just watching the goals out there.
Quality finishes. Yeah, didn't get a chance to see the game. Yeah. Really well worked goals.
Playing the kind of football, Kev, that we could only dream of when we're without Wes Hoolihan. So we'll talk about all that. Brian Kerr with us very shortly as well. We had a poll on our Twitter page earlier on. 76% of off the ball listeners don't want Mr. Trumpet Man back at the Aviva Stadium. One person made an interesting point to me, which you can comment on or not comment on.
Is it really an interesting point, Joel?
It's interesting-ish. I was making the point, you know, the atmosphere maybe isn't always brilliant, and anything we can do to help it along, well, I appreciate it's a sad situation that artificial music like this is needed. But somebody said, well, just say you were somebody who didn't want certain songs sung, you know. Trumpet would be a handy way of rising above and drowning out those, I don't know, protest songs or whatever way you want to describe certain songs. Just it was just a seed sown in my head. That's an interesting point. Trumpet's a hell of a weapon, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's loud.
Yeah.
I hadn't considered that, but...
off the back of that, you were saying about the atmosphere hasn't always been great at Aviva. I don't think it's been too bad in the last year. I think there was a certain turn around that Germany game.
Yeah.
And I think it has been quite decent. Whenever I've been to the Aviva in the last year or so, I think it's been quite good.
That's a fair point. I'd agree with you. It has improved. The team and the fans have a much better relationship. So I just wonder, is there a button somewhere in the stadium where at certain points someone can press it when they want to? Yeah, a bit like that. Yeah. Anyway, we'll move on. Don't drown me out, Trumpet. So Martin O'Neill spoke today. We'll bring you what O'Neill was saying before we get into Brian Kerr. Myself and Kev obviously talked about the game a lot at this stage, so good to get a fresh voice with Brian Kerr on. Kev gave a lot of his thoughts yesterday on the Sunday show, which you can listen back to as well. Naturally, first thing Martin O'Neill is asked about, as you can imagine, is Seamus Coleman and the extent to which it completely overshadowed the whole night.
You know what? The result on Friday evening was almost secondary as well too. So it's a bad blow. It's a bad blow for the player who's been terrific for us. He's having a wonderful season at Everton. And he was missed even for the last couple of days around the place as well too. So, but I think that he's very, very positive. He'll get into recovery mode as quickly as possible, and then it's up to him.
And Martin, from your own experience, you would have had players who suffered similar injuries to Seamus. What kind of comebacks do they make, and would you be confident that he'd be able to get there again?
Well, there's a. Before I went to Celtic, about 5 or 6 months before that, Henrik Larsson had a very serious injury, and he recovered magnificently. And the injury didn't bother him again from then until the end of his career. So players have recovered. Great players have broken their legs and come back. And Seamus should take. Obviously, it's very early for him to start be considering all of those things, but he is positive. Naturally, as I mentioned earlier at the start, he's down, as he would be, as the realisation that he's going to be out of action for quite some considerable time has dawned on him. So those type of things don't just take 5 minutes to get over. But he's very strong. He's got a lot of good people around him. His family are very, very strong as well. And he is he's positive that he'll be back and as good as ever.
Naturally, people did turn their attention to the game tomorrow, and there was almost a sense of, well, how do you and the players approach it now? And maybe you'd rather do without this game, given everything that's happened. So
yeah.
O'Neill was asked about really why friendlies like this really matter. And it's been some time, actually, since he's had a friendly to play around with and try new players in. So he talked about that.
The friendly games still have an importance in terms of... your positioning. Some international teams don't play friendly matches at all in case they lose the games and coefficient drops a little bit. But we've taken this game on. We've taken some games on as well too before we, in the summertime, before we play Austria. And they're tough challenges for us. Iceland were brilliant in the Euros. They won on Friday night. And they'll present us with a few problems. But I'm hoping that the lads that who will start in the game and who will come on will actually go and basically press a claim for future international matches.
And so with that in mind, the younger players that we might see tonight?
No, well, there's a couple of lads who have gone home, and John O'Shea being one back to his club, John Walters, Glenn Whelan, so they won't play. And I think, in all honesty, in fairness to clubs as well, too, it is it's a friendly game, and some of the lads who played on Friday night who are still with us probably won't start in the game, and might not participate at all.
If you said maybe Daryl Horgan or Conor Hourihan or Andy Boyle, John Egan, players like that, I mean, are they mm-hmm. are they in contention?
Yeah, very much so. You don't want to give out caps just because they're there. You want them to earn it. But obviously, the point you make is a good point, that for experience, we would want that. Now, you talk about some fringe players, some players who have just come into the squad, like the two lads who are now at Preston, have acquitted themselves very well in training. And they're basically just starting out in their international career. Some other players who've been around the squad and who haven't played regularly may well play as well. And I think it's whatever length of time they have in the field tomorrow evening, I think it's a chance to try and impress. And I think that's what they'll probably try and do.
Yeah, just before we get into Brian Kerr, who in particular are you looking forward to seeing tomorrow, hope to see tomorrow?
I'd love to see Daryl Horgan. I think he deserves his chance mm-hmm. with his form has been shown at Preston North End. Conor Hourihan would be another one. He's moved to Villa. I'd like to see him.
I haven't seen much of Hourihan, but he's obviously done excellently at Barnsley.
He's technically good. And a good attacking midfielder that will get on the end of crosses. He'll arrive into the penalty area. So he's a player that we probably don't have at the moment. We don't have that sort of player in the side. The main box-to-box player would be Hendrick, but Jeff Hendrick's not necessarily that player that would arrive around the penalty spot for cutbacks or anything like that to finish him off. So he could be a player that could do that for us, potentially. That's what I'm looking at. Three Preston North End players in the Irish side. Could be big night.
So we're doing that match live, and Kev, I know you're covering it as well for Air Sports, so we'll speak to you in advance kickoff as well. We'll be on the air from 7 at the Aviva. Nathan and Stewie call on the action from 7:45. Now, we're delighted to say Brian Kerr is with us to discuss Friday night. And Brian, we will 100% talk about the performance itself, because maybe the quality of that performance and the discussion around it has been lost, understandably, given what happened to Seamus Coleman in particular. But we must start with Coleman. Something I want to get your feel for, you've been around the game a long time. The referee Nicola Rizzioli is coming in for some criticism. He has refereed a World Cup final, a Europa League final, a Champions League final, so he knows what he's doing. Was your sense as we approached the 66-67 minute, just before the Bale tackle, was your sense that he had let things slide way too much?
No, I thought that he was quite conscious that these are two Celtic teams who play a British style game, whether we like to be referred in that way or not. That's the reality of the games when we play Scotland or England or Wales or Northern Ireland. I think there was a leniency on his part that was reasonable for most of the first half. And unfortunately, maybe that leniency was taken for granted by some of the players and it went too far. But initially, I would have looked at him saying he was doing well, he was making good decisions and he was being fair and reasonable and not too finicky about fouls, about not the most disgraceful fouls you've ever seen. But unfortunately, that turned sour for Ireland as the match went on, and John O'Shea was the victim of what could have been a red card foul, red card offence, and Seamus Coleman's injury then from Taylor's foul. But Glenn Whelan got away with the elbow before half time too. So while we and Martin O'Neill and the staff can complain that Gareth Bale got off lightly, I think Glenn probably got off lightly. But it was in keeping with how the match had been refereed in the first half.
Brian, you mentioned that leniency there during the first half. Do you think that came into Chris Coleman's team talk during half-time, trying to impose themselves physically against Ireland?
I have no idea what Chris Coleman said at half-time, but I think at half-time he would have been reasonably happy with how his team had played, in that they had dominated possession. Our only opportunities came from a couple of corner kicks played into the penalty area, where there was almost an opportunity for us. But other than that, we hadn't created anything remotely like a clear-cut chance. Wales were in control of possession. Anything remarkable skill-wise in the game was coming from his team. The one excellent ball from Bale out of nothing in behind defence that Taylor didn't quite control when he ran into the penalty area. He actually ran around the back of Seamus Coleman. The ball was on his inside. But I would have thought that he was saying, well, this is not as bad as maybe we expected before the match. Ireland are being a bit rough with us. I doubt he said, look, we've got to get out and be a bit harder. I think we saw Joe Allen's reaction with Glenn Whelan just before half-time in that instance. You know, he knew he got a belt from Glenn, and he was giving Glenn a mouthful after it. So I don't know what he said, but I think he'd be more concerned about, are we making chances and making our possession better. You know, I don't think you could point at the second half and say, well, Wales obviously changed their tune and their attitude in the second half was, look, let's get stuck in a bit more to Ireland. Because, I mean, Bale hadn't been involved in any tackles up until the point of the John O'Shea thing. He was what he had done in the game was shown in bits and pieces and flashes his outstanding ability to come up with something special. And we saw that as the game went on. It was three or four things that he did that were outstanding in the match.
One last question on the referee then. Is it a misplaced leniency? When you see what happened to someone like Coleman, do you look at it, Brian, and think, well, do you know what? Maybe actually the day has come where you can't just be that lenient anymore because it increases the chances of something nasty happening? Or would you say to that referee, go out and ref exactly the same way again?
Well, most complaints about referees are that they were too sticky in implementing the rules. That's the biggest complaint you hear about people who watch football.
They ruin the game.
God's sake, ruin the game. Too many yellow cards. Given out to and often, you know, the attitude of Irish teams, British teams in general, Irish teams playing in Europe is always, look, it's a different type of refereeing. You can't get away with what you normally get away with in the League of Ireland, or what you get away with the Premier League, the Scottish League, or the Welsh League, and that you have to adapt to it. And referees would be a lot fussier. So, you know, having that attitude, which generally applies to Irish teams and Irish attitudes, we can't complain too much if a referee plays it to the way we generally like it to be played, which is, you know, we let a few things go, fellas get stuck into each other early in the game, there's the odd slightly late tackle. And unfortunately, the other night it went too far. I mean, if Gareth Bale's tackle, if he'd received a red card for that, I have no doubt there wouldn't have been another serious tackle late in the match. But that's later in the game. But that's like, you can't change that situation. Referee made a decision at the time. My initial view of it, I didn't think it was a red card offence. Maybe because it was Bale and John O'Shea who were involved, who were two of the generally nicest fellas who play football. And kind of said, well, Gareth Bale wouldn't really do that, would he? You know. But it was bad enough to be a red card. But had he had received a red card, I have no doubt the other one wouldn't come up. But that's how it goes. Maybe Neil Taylor was just in the moment. I don't think there was any intention to deliberately. There was no intention to deliberately hurt him. But he went for it and he was out of control and it was a dangerous tackle and all the other stuff. But I don't think you can put a mass blanket over the whole game and say the referee got it wrong, should have started bit stricter, Yeah. Should have booked Shane Long for the late one on Ashley Williams. Could have been Harshall and Glenn. I don't think so. I think, you know, the referee, unfortunately, just, he played as he saw fit, and with two, you know, Wales and Ireland, Celtic neighbours, and it rebounded on him late on in the game.
Yeah. Just for the listeners at home, this exact point came up with Martin O'Neill in his press conference today. Have a quick listen.
You were telling us on Friday night John O'Shea had some stud marks on his leg. Were you surprised here that Gareth Bale wants to appeal that yellow card?
Well, I don't think you can appeal a yellow card unless it's for mistaken identity.
He did feel that it wasn't a yellow card. Chris Coleman told us he had to go for it, the ball, that is. Do you feel that the referee failed in his duty of care to protect your players? Because had he have shown a red card for that challenge, Seamus Coleman may not have had a broken leg at the end of the night.
He may not have done, that is true. The referee's in charge of the game. That's the point. As I mentioned earlier there, I thought both challenges, when I've seen them back, have been very, very poor. Very poor indeed.
So that was his take. Kev, one of the key differences with the Bale tackle and the Coleman tackle is Coleman's gone into it, I suppose, a 50-50 ostensibly, whereas Bale and O'Shea is very, very vulnerable. It's not actually a 50-50 tackle.
I felt a little bit with that. I felt that Bale could have pulled out of that. I felt as though, as he was travelling at speed, but I felt as though he could have pulled his leg away. And I think he's just gone to leave a little bit on John O'Shea and has said, I could have seen that. It's certainly been a red card, definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Just on the Bale issue there, Brian, you spoke about the good things that Bale did in the game. And I read your column on Friday where you were talking about, basically, we were all going into the game thinking of Bale as a one-man team, essentially. But you were talking about the influence of Joe Allen in the game, perhaps having to stop him to neutralise the threat of Bale. But how did you feel as though that Ireland coped with Joe Allen, coped with Gareth Bale on the whole across the 90 minutes?
I think certainly with Gareth Bale, our approach, well, there was obviously no approach to mark a man-to-man. There was definitely approach that you've got to be aware of where he is and make sure that we've got numbers around to close him down when it looks like he's going to get the ball, and don't allow him to get a free run. He got one opportunity in the first half, I think, to run away, where he dispossessed David Moyle, I think, and James McLean came across the right wing and made a brilliant tackle to win Waitman. But other than that, he didn't really get a run where our defence was scarce. I thought they handled that quite well, generally because we had the numbers behind the ball, and Glenn Whelan, Jeff Hendrick and David Moyler were generally goal side, protecting the back four, and Tyus Walters and James McLean were as well. So I think that bit of it we did well. I don't think we did a very good job in terms of Joe Allen controlling possession and controlling the tempo of the game. And Jeff Hendrick was caught between Ledley and Joe Allen, and he was never really getting close to either of them. And Wales have the confidence to release the ball to Joe Allen and let him get on it. Because Shane Long was playing through the middle on his own, he wasn't able to affect Joe Ledley, who drops back short to receive it off the back three. So I didn't think we dealt with that too well, but maybe the concern was further up the pitch in the Irish half to ensure that they didn't make the breakthrough, which they didn't. But I just don't like the idea that a team can come to Dublin and outplay us in our own ground and have the possession and pass it around and kill the crowd's enthusiasm for getting behind the team. And that's what happened until the sending off in the match. They controlled possession, killed the enthusiasm of the crowd, other than the brass band, who were a bit of a nuisance anyway. And they dictated the game, but they hadn't got the quality ahead of Bale to come up with anything. Neither Robson Kanu or Sam Vokes did it for me. And I think Wales know that themselves. They get a bit from Ramsey, obviously, Ledley and Bale around the middle from the wing backs. But ahead of them, they don't have a class striker.
There are certain nights where you can forgive a good, healthy dose of pragmatism, like maybe Serbia away when the pitch is bad. But at home on a Friday night, that point you bring up about them outplaying us, we seem to go direct every time, and I appreciate someone like Wes Houlihan is just, you know, a vital cog in getting us up the pitch as a team. But there was enough there quality wise for us to try a bit more on the ball.
Yeah, well, if you look at Seamus Coleman closely, his first three possessions in the match, his ball, his out ball was towards Walters, not on the right wing position where you might be trying to play it in at his feet. He was 15, 20 yards in off the touchline, and it was a ball forward towards him. Now, we won 2 out of 3 with a flick on. The first one, Shane wasn't getting near it. The second one, he didn't win it. The third one, he won the flick on. Shane had a bit of a go at getting on to the end of it.
Yeah.
But that was the approach. It wasn't the approach of play inside. Kevin played left back for a while. You know, it's better than me what it's about. When you get it, the left back or right back should have 3 or 4 options. Your first option might be a winger down the line beside you. Your next option would be inside your midfield player, into his feet, to switch the play or link it up to the front. And his next option will be into the front man, dropping short into his feet,
yeah.
And then the fourth one is over the top. We didn't have that option. It was runaway stuff, and it seemed almost deliberate. I wondered, why was Jeff Hendricks not looking for the ball to try and get it to his feet? And for me, his performance, I mean, we know what we get from David Myler and Glenn Whelan. Glenn has done a good job for years and years. It's not most inventive football, but it's a protection job midfield. He's around, he breaks up the opposition, and he keeps things moving. Not always in a very pounced away or anything like that. David Myler, similar. But Hendricks is the one we're looking to now,
yeah.
If Robbie Brady and Wes are not playing. And for me, the other night, his performance was very poor. And the whole thing was quite disappointing. You go to home match, I expect a bit more from Ireland other than what we've seen at home to Georgia and Wales, where we got 1 goal in 2 games. Seamus Coleman pulling a goal out of the bag against Georgia from the running along the end line, a few bubbles back and forward to him. But other than that, Georgia outplayed us in there. So that worries me that we go into the Austria and Serbia match saying, oh, we're doing great, we've 11 points and we've 3 home games. So the 2 home games we've had, we haven't conceded. We haven't done anything either. I think Austria have a little bit going for them in the attacking positions. We were able to go over there and beat them on the counter. Serbia are improving as it goes on. I always felt they would. But we're in a position where we can kill Austria off by a win in the next game.
Yeah.
And we're in a position where we can kill Serbia off in the next, the one after that, and stroll through the last 3. But are we capable of doing it? Not on the performance of the night, but I give that the 3 players that played in the midfield the other night, if our best options were available, none of them may have played.
Yeah. That said, I mean, it did feel very deliberate. It did feel like we're taking no chances. Any time the fullbacks got the ball in the first half hour, particularly, every single one went long. It was slow. Like, I was thinking, like, for all we know, McLean could have the beating of the fullback or the guy, his man, but he was never once given the ball out wide to feet. It's just very frustrating. And to preempt texts coming in, and I'll put them to you, I really don't agree with it anymore, but people will say, well, look, the players aren't good enough to do that. But we have seen them on occasion break out and put something together.
Ah, yeah, we do have players that are good enough to do that. I mean, are we worse players than Northern Ireland around the midfield area? Not at all. And yet they're passing it. I watched the match last night. It was a good mixture to the game, whether it was long or short. We can mix it up and play it forward and use the strength and physicality of our front players and all that. But, you know, you've got to have parts of the game where you control possession to some degree and bring people into the game, as you said, that are waiting on a pass. James McLean spent most of his match the other night until the last 20 minutes chasing back a full back,
yeah.
As did Walters on the other side. And Walters did a great job in the first half matching Taylor a lot of the time when Wales went for the diagonal. But none of our midfield players ever tried to play a diagonal in behind their full backs to James McLean. There were opportunities in the first half and they didn't see it, where he was in space out wider than James Chester and the ball wasn't played to him. And so he was constantly on the back foot because Joe Allen is controlling the game and he's running backwards and gets the odd ball and then wants to run with it and prove that he can do something, but he runs into a crowd with it. But, you know, look, it just frustrates me a little bit. I think we're a bit better than that. And as you're indicating, Joe, there seemed to be no great intent there to try and start it and play and link up and get. But when we have players, that changes because he forces people into playing the ball to him by the position and the space he finds. And none of the 3 the other day found that space and time that he's able to find.
Right, so Could that argument that the injuries and suspensions that we had ultimately did cost us, and we've actually got a decent result in this game then?
Uh, yeah, I think so. I think it's fair to say that the result before the match, I felt it would be a draw. I was surprised it was a draw. I felt our attitude early in the game showed that we weren't going to risk everything to try and win the match and throw people forward and leave it open. The selection that Myler replaced McCarthy at such a late stage was also a sign of that, that there was a conservative in the approach that was saying, if we don't get beat, we keep a gap of 4 points here and that's good for us. And with the circumstances I've been missing, probably four starters, possibly five starters, maybe the two centre-backs would have been changed. Wells may or may not have played. James McCarthy would have played, obviously, if he was selected as it was. Brady would have played. So you're looking at a 4-5. Arthur might have played. You might have five changes. So in those circumstances, I think it's legit to say, yeah, it was a good point for us on the night.
Mm. Just a final one. It was odd to see an Irish crowd. It seemed uncharacteristic, booing Bale from the off. Was there any reason that we missed out why we were doing that?
Well, I don't know. I don't get it at all. I mean, our chances of seeing the top players in the world in Dublin don't come that regularly. We don't have a league that entices them in. We're not playing the latter stage of the Champions League. You know, and I can remember the times when I saw Pelé in Dublin, the one time I saw Pelé in Dublin in a friendly match with Santos, and a mixture of drums and bowls at the time, for a testimonial for John Whelan. But, you know, and after that, Maradona came and played 16 or 17 year old for Argentina. I'm Messi. And you remember those times as being a little bit special, seeing the special players. Ronaldo played against us with Portugal, with Kevin was playing the national team. And now Bale is up in that category at the moment, as the top six or seven attacking players in the world. And yet, our crowd are booing him from early in the match. I didn't get it. I don't understand it. I really didn't get it. I mean, I could understand him booing him late on after he tackled John O'Shea.
Yeah.
But not before then. I don't see anything in his career that he's done today, in his behaviour on or off the pitch, that induced that type of attitude from the Irish supporters. Maybe they felt by booing him from early on, it was going to put him off his game. And, you know, lure him into doing what he did on John O'Shea. Maybe they felt that they should try and affect him, put him off by that way. For me, I just kind of thought, strange stuff.
Mm. Brian, thanks a million for all that.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, Joe. Thanks, Kevin.
News Talks Off the Ball.
Home of the Saturday panel.
Thanks to Air. Catch Leinster versus Wasps exclusively live this weekend on the Air Sport Pack.
Welcome back. So Brian Kerr there. Gareth Bale being booed. You noticed that as well, did you?
Yeah, very noticeable start of the game. I didn't really have a strong opinion as Brian on it, but I know that Brian, you mentioned there, he's seen Pelé. He's seen some of the greatest come to Dublin. And I mean, I've played in internationals when we've had, I think, Henrik Larsson play once in Dublin, and the response he was getting, you know, obviously not least because he played for Celtic, but the response because of his ability. And I've seen many, we played against Brazil, Ronaldo, the original Ronaldo, and Ronaldinho coming to Dublin, the response that they got, the applause that they were getting. Mm. So yeah, I was quite surprised, and even thinking about it, and I never really thought about it like Brian. It's only when Brian got me thinking about it then. It was surprising.
Yeah.
Very surprising. Considering he is one of the world's best. He's one of the greatest players that's playing the game at the moment.
He's not an especially annoying character either. You know, he's not Ronaldo.
Apart from Friday. Yeah.
Yeah, well, up until the 67th minute, he was pretty good. And Brian certainly feels we weren't doing enough as a team. We haven't talked too much about the performance in light of what happened, but I don't know. It's just a reoccurring problem. Mm. So I don't really see it changing.
You could sense his frustration there, I suppose, when I think probably so often over the years when we have been up against it, and you're trying to grind out results and you're getting the best out of probably a side. I mean, I'm talking about one of the better sides.
Yeah.
And you're seeing Wales coming in to town and Wales dominating on the ball. I mean, I still stand by the fact is that I just didn't see Wales scoring. It was only those moments from Bale that it could have changed the game. Don't get me wrong, the couple of moments that he had in the game, Bale, like, you know, when you could really see his start quality.
Yeah.
I thought they were disappointing. And John Hartson spoke about it on Saturday when he was on Talking to Joe, Nathan and Dave.
Mm.
just how poor Robson Carney was. He was incredibly poor.
He was anonymous.
That was kind of like the weak link within Wales, I suppose, yeah.
I think if they had a proper target man there,
and Volks and Brian switching Volks as well. Volks wasn't involved.
The Bale pass out of nowhere, though, over the top, the 30-40 yard that was miscontrolled.
That was a couple of moments in the game. That's where they had a little bit of joy, where Neil Taylor was getting in off the back of Seamus Coleman. He got him a couple of times first half, maybe once in the second half, where Seamus Coleman just had a few problems with that. Mm. So that was probably it, wasn't it? I mean, Neil Taylor, if it was Bale in that position, the ball's coming over his shoulder, you think he's taking that and it's a goal. So that's the difference, I suppose.
On us and our relationship with the football, it often occurs to me that one of the loneliest positions in Irish sport is to be a Republic of Ireland footballer with the ball. Cause
why is this then? Why is it? Yeah.
Nobody's really your friend. No one's digging you out. There's only one player, if you're a Republic of Ireland footballer with the ball, who is breaking his backside to help you out. And his name's Wes. He's doing it for you. He is making angles all day. And if one angle doesn't work, he's turning around and sprinting another 4 or 5 yards and making another angle. Mm. And I was talking to Ray Houghton about this a while back, about a year ago, because I just can't figure it out. Is it just technically we're that inferior? Mm. And yet, you know, think of the best players. I'm not talking to you here. I'm talking to the listeners. Think of the best players you've ever played with growing up and how good they were on the ball. And generally speaking, none of them even got close to a professional career. So think how good Glenn Whelan must be when it comes to controlling a ball and passing a ball. The much maligned Glenn Whelan. So technically, we are good enough to control a ball, pass it, control a ball, pass it. And Ray Houghton said, it's not about our technique, actually. It's about the way we move. Our movement is awful. We never move well as a team. And he was talking about when he played for Liverpool and just the options you'd have on the ball by comparison, the movement all around you, knowing how to move as a team. You know, we talked about McLean never once in that whole game being given the ball and standing up the fullback, or no, it's 3-4-3, but whoever was going to be coming out to him, never getting a chance to even see if he had the beating of the man, because we can't seem to work a ball to McLean. And I don't know, is it at international level, it feels like it's beneath these players to work on basic things like pattern. And well, what are we going to do here when O'Shea has the ball or Coleman has the ball? What's our plan? Like, what are we kind of thinking vaguely? Can we work on a few patterns?
There's an element of that. Of course, it didn't work at the weekend, but you only need to look back at the Austria game and again. It does maybe highlight the fact is when you've not got Hulen and Brady as well, because Brady's a good midfield player.
Robbie Brady can come and take the ball.
And he'll be prepared to maybe take chances, take risks, make mistakes. Mm. Certainly Wes Houlihan will. But the one notable thing that we've probably not really touched on, I suppose, as well, in relation to Wes Houlihan, we know his ability on the ball, but we've spoken recently in the internationals about what Wes Houlihan give you when we didn't have the ball. What was his immediate reaction as soon as the ball was given away? Mm. Straight on the front foot, going close down. Of course, in turn, gets the back four up 5 yards further up the pitch. He gets the midfield lads a bit further forward. Then you're winning balls in key areas, or essentially that's what the plan is. You're winning balls in better areas, and that is where you perhaps then it's an easier pass to give it to McLean, to give it to, if it is tomorrow night, a McGeady or a Horgan or whoever it would be. Then they can go and have a chance at beating the fullback.
Yeah, it's true. We're definitely better if we win it higher up, because we're not able to work our way up the field as a team.
I guess the mindset
combined with our limitations, the mindset was, well, we don't need to win this game. If we just sit deep and are clever.
And I can understand that mindset, though.
I know, so can I. I just found it frustrating, is the point.
Yeah, I understand. I understand. And something that we spoke about, the game didn't carry too much quality, I don't think, overall.
No.
I think we had probably less quality than Wales through longer spells. And that's right. But
would you have found in an Ireland team too often you didn't have options on the ball?
There's been times like that. Yeah, there has been times when we've had to, maybe, well, we've not had to, but we have sat deep, probably too deep. And when I've watched the game back myself, you're thinking we could maybe be 5-10 yards further forward as a side. But there has been that, reluctance. I mean, it's probably worth it. Like tonight, I suppose, we didn't really touch on it with John, but John O'Shea asking that question that, Is that maybe in a centre half's mindset? We maybe hopefully get Richard Dunn on at some stage to chat about it as well. And when we spoke to Richard about the issues as well about keeping the ball, that first of all, it's doing your job, seeing spells through when teams have the ball against you. But in doing that, that in turn's dragging the midfielders back on top of you. It's keeping Shane Long or whoever it is that's playing up front as a number nine quite isolated. They have to have 5-6 touches for the rest of the team to get to up get with up. Them. So,
because it didn't even seem like very often, like even when one was clipped to Long, not often enough was McLean running off him, looking to pick it up, or Walters. Like there was one time Walters got off Long in the first half.
Yeah.
But generally it was going up to Long.
And he worked hard. Shane Long worked really hard. He worked so hard.
What can he do?
Difficult. He had such a difficult job.
Yeah.
And you know, you're playing against the three, aren't you, at times as well? And that frustration come out, I suppose, with him with the challenge that he put in on Williams. But I think
look, I'm being too harsh on them when I'm saying
I do. And I'm now
firmly in the Stephen Kenny camp.
No, but I touched on it yesterday as well, Joel, that, yeah, okay, and I said about it with Stephen Kenny, yeah, total respect for what he's done with Dundalk, and they have done great, but there is that real mentality when you're around a hotel and you're just constantly watching everything, and the pressure is on those players, knowing full well that if we don't get beat in this game, we are in with a great chance of qualification. And it does lead to perhaps a slightly negative mindset. And you know, having been there, that's what it can lead to. And it's sometimes a difficult watch, granted, but I'm sure the team themselves will be thinking, you know what, we've got a good result. Yeah. Thanks very much. And that's what ultimately Friday night's game is about now.
Yeah, and you know what? I never mind if it's a crap watch. I really don't, because I'm not watching Ireland every week and I just want us to get to the big tournament. So I genuinely don't mind if it's terrible. I can put up with a bad 90 minutes every 3 months and I move on. I just actually think we're a better team when we get it. Whenever we have this discussion and we work through the various points, it's always when you make the point you've just made that I have to say, okay, fair enough. You know, the point is, it's different to Premier League game. It's different to any other game you're playing. The pressure in the hotel, 5-6 days.
It's not. I'm not saying that should be given as a total excuse for it.
No, but I understand human
because
nature.
You're in that position because you're playing international football. You've got to that level for a reason. So you've got to try and show why you're playing international football. There's a reason you're there. You've got to then maintain your standards, maintain your form, and show exactly what you're capable of doing.
I know.
I'm not saying it's not an excuse, but I'm saying that's exactly what it is like.
And not to make your point for you, it's human nature.
Yeah.
You have to. There's what should happen in life, and then there's human nature. So I understand. It's like no other game you play. It's not like a Premier League game. It's not like a mistake you make.
And it is. It
will
is.
Hang over you forever.
Around these big games, it's totally different from your club football. No matter what anyone's, it's totally different. It's ramped up so much, and a lot of our lads in general, they're not playing at top four clubs.
No.
They're not playing top six clubs. This is their top six football, top of the Premier League clashes. These are the games, and there's so much scrutiny on the players around these games. That's why that. Some of the lads over the years have got the hump when little things have been written about them because they're not getting things written about them at the clubs.
Well, a perfect example, I would say in the Stoke Chronicle, Glenn Whelan is barely ever mentioned. And yet here, for a week, Glenn Whelan is discussed ad nauseum by everyone. And, you know, but, you take his experience, it encapsulates the point you're making. He doesn't get it at a Premier League level and then he comes over here and there's so much scrutiny on all the players. So I do understand how they tense up that little bit or there's a touch of negativity or a touch of
and put that around 11, Joe, as well.
Sure.
All the 11 would be the same. The scrutiny of Shane Long, he's not scoring. Why has he not scored in 20 games? You know, we were talking about the Moldova game earlier on this season, not scored in 20 games.
Yeah.
Why is James McLean not starting for West Brom? I might not necessarily start him. Aidan McGeady, why is he not starting the game? He's in great form. You can branch that out as much as you want. We're going on every play. We're making a point on every single one of the players. Mm. The only player I probably think that's maybe very much gone on, well, apart from Seamus Coleman, who's given his in the side, probably the only one that's under the radar a little bit is Darren Randolph, because he's just been Mr. It's Consistent.
Taking along,
and no one's saying anything about him. Mm. Every one of the outfield players who's playing, there's probably someone somewhere having that little argument to say, I wouldn't necessarily play him.
Yeah.
And that's ultimately it.
It contributes, there's no doubt, because we are a bit stilted. There's something going on. We'll take a short break. As you may have noticed, Kevin and I have definitely tried to disguise the fact that Simon Cooper didn't answer his phone. So that's the Simon Cooper slot, I'm sorry to say. We will get him on because we can talk about Danny Blind being sacked as the manager of the Netherlands tomorrow or on Wednesday or Thursday at some stage. So We will guilt Simon Cooper, who's let us down, to come on the show in the next few days. Tom Dunn, hello.
Good evening.
You missed some excellent filler there, Tom.
I can kind of spot a bit of filler these days. You know, when you hear it, all right. I was listening to your conversation on the way in. I was watching that game.
What do you think, Tom?
I think, here's after all the analysis that's gone over the weekend, that yeah, the referee was lenient with, you know, trying to let them play.
Yeah.
But the Gareth Bale tackle, for me, was a game changer, and he should have gone there and then.
Yeah.
I thought it was just, he has to go. I thought if I saw that in the Premiership, he'd be gone. Mm. So I couldn't understand. When I saw O'Shea's reaction to it, I doubly thought he should be on.
If the referee sees that, then
yeah,
if he sees it fully, properly, if he gets a great view at it and sees what we all saw, do you believe in that? That would have been it, red, straight.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Red. And then the next thing
doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Although, in a Back to the Future kind of a way, it doesn't happen. But people have said, people have almost talked about the Bale yellow card as if, well, that gave Taylor the okay to do what he did to Coleman. And I don't believe that. Because I think if you're where Taylor was on the pitch without the benefit of a replay, you may just think, well, but Bale's gone in there and had a go, and maybe he's caught him, maybe he's not, I can't really see, and suddenly play has started again. So this notion that Taylor saw the Bale thing and thought, right, this gives me carte blanche to go in, that is nonsense.
That's a good point, actually,
Taylor's not getting a replay.
But that's the referee's responsibility, though, isn't it?
But if he sees Bale walking, he's going to watch himself.
Totally.
He's
Well, I'll tell you what, Tom. Sure. If Bale's walking, he's not in that position anyway, because he's immediately on the back foot. He's retreating. Yeah. So he's not actually looking to take a chance and step in. They're looking to contain them for the rest of the match.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, so everything changes.
I think we look at those tackles these days and you kind of instinctively know, oh, that's a bad one.
Yeah.
Because nine out of 10 times people are walking, often to find out that it wasn't that bad in retrospect.
Yeah. We're getting lots of texts in on trumpets.
Yes, I heard about this. I believe the trumpets were very annoying on Friday night.
I didn't have necessarily a huge view on it.
Richie was very upset.
Rich was off.
Yeah.
Somebody makes the point that they were sure the trumpets were coming out over the tannoy, which is definitely illegal. So that's one. Any experiences with trumpets in your life?
Trumpets are one of the most beautiful instruments in the world, and we use a piccolo trumpet and a man called John Walsh in live
piccolo
gigs.
Trumpet.
Piccolo trumpet is the one that's used on Penny Lane. You know that beautiful, really high trumpet solo?
Yeah.
And then Thin Lizzy or Phil Lynott used it on Old Town.
Yes.
And we literally travelled to America when we were recording our album and brought a copy of Old Town with us and got an LA session head in and played it to him and said something like that. And then he played a pile of rubbish to us. So we whistled what we wanted to him and he wrote out the notes and he played it back to us. And it was beautiful.
Wow.
So we do that now live. And when it happens, it takes the roof off the place. It's kind of like a song is getting better and better and there's nowhere else for it to go. But a piccolo trumpet is as good as it gets. That's the peak, most beautiful moment in a song.
Wow. That's the unexpected, beautiful oomph that you weren't expecting.
Yeah.
You thought we could do no more.
Yeah, but then the trumpet comes in and when John Walsh comes on with us, he gets a round of applause. People chanting his name. They want us to do the song again. We're trying to find other songs that have piccolo trumpets in
them.
Is
he free for Ireland matches?
He plays with the RT Orchestra, I think, so he might be, yeah. Okay. I'll get him in for you. I have new stuff from the Gorillaz, new album from them, which is great. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Jenny Beth from Savages is on. She's a star. Mm. I think she's a really, really cool dude. Tribe Called Quest, still loving Hooray for the Riff Raff, Jens Lechman, Flight of the Conchords. Comedy, yeah. Pet Shop Boys are playing. So
Flight of the Conchords were huge a couple of years ago.
They seem to have gone off into different things.
Yeah.
I was at one of the kids' movies and there was this brilliant song in it and I just thought, that's Flight of the Conchords.
Right.
And when I checked it, it was one of them singing it, although the director had actually written the song in the style of Flight of the Conchords, which says a lot about how good the director is.
Yeah.
So yeah, they've got, I think if you're getting paid to be in Disney movies, you probably don't need to do Flight of the Conchords that often.
No, that's true. Tom Dunn on the way after.
We have a dream.
10 o'clock.
News Talks Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
Thanks to AIR, with UEFA Champions and Europa Leagues action. Brought to you by AIR Sport.
The reason the crowd were booing Bale is that generally, the knowledge of the game amongst modern day fans is non-existent, says Alex and Salvage. I don't know if I can agree with that. I've attended every competitive home game since 1974. I missed one a few years ago. I was really agitated last night by the constant stream of people leaving their seats to go to the Jacks. Oh, this must be on Friday night. Buy burgers, beer, etc. It was atrocious. The trumpets to a point and the drums I could live with, but these fans weren't even watching the action. Appalling, says Alex. be in Galway. How does Roy Keane stand behind the kind of soccer we play? He railed against boring football when we played. To a point, he railed against substandard preparation more so. I don't know. I think Roy had his pragmatic moments as well. I mean, he certainly would, to be fair. He would try and get on the ball and dictate the play. I take the point being Galway. I'm just being difficult there. And Cormac O'Malley said, genuinely interesting point from Kevin Kilbane on the pressure getting to players in the Irish squad. I hadn't thought about it before. Yeah, I remember you saying it for the first time a couple of years ago and I thought, that's a fair point. This ain't Everton against West Brom, a game no one's talked about on a Saturday.
Mm.
And if you screw up in it, it won't define you for a long time in the eyes of millions of people.
Yeah.
Totally. It's different. It's different. You're going to be that bit more tense. It's a different preparation for a lot of Premier League players who go under the radar in their day-to-day or their usual week.
You're playing week to week. No scrutiny whatsoever.
Yeah. You're
thrust into something. Yeah,
assholes on the radio saying, well, he's not good enough and he's not good enough.
Yeah.
If we lose this, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, who's that fella? Who's that fella Malloy? Who's that? What? Who's he? What's he done?
Precisely. Yeah. And they're not wrong. We have live commentary of the Iceland match tomorrow night, and earlier we gave you a chance to win a pair of tickets to the game. We asked you which Icelandic artist has a song called It's Oh So Quiet. The answer, of course, is Björk. And congratulations to Kevin Whelan. You've won tickets to the game tomorrow, and you better go. If you missed out tonight, go to fai.ie for details on how to get your international season tickets. So we're kind of out of time. We waffled on a bit too much there. Northern Ireland, really impressive, well-worked goals. A 2-0 win against Norway.
Yep.
They lost 3-0 to Norway in a friendly when O'Neill was starting, Michael O'Neill, and everyone said, God, this has just gone from bad to worse. And they are routinely dispatching of Norway's now.
Two good goals. Yeah. Two well-worked goals, actually. First one, I can't remember, but I should know the name. I actually played alongside him at Derby. Played alongside him at Derby, so that's the name I should know. Second one was
Washington.
Connor Washington, set up brilliantly out wide by Connor McLaughlin. That's what I'm thinking here. Played it inside, lovely little ball inside. Freed him up with a lovely through ball. Yeah. Not made the goalkeeper. Brilliantly worked goals.
It was good. We'll get your take on England. There wasn't much to say about the England game. It's maybe one of the reasons we've glossed over it. We'll get your take on England later in the week. That's us done for this evening. We're live from the Aviva tomorrow, 7 o'clock.
News Talks Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
Thanks to AIR, with UEFA Champions and Europa Leagues action. Brought to you by AIR Sports.